Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first quarter equity overview. I am very pleased to be joined by Tim Caban, who has joined us before on the equity overview and has now agreed. I've now shanghaied you into doing two or three a year, and I'm very grateful because it's always a delight to, to talk with you about the markets and what's going on.
Absolutely, and I thank you. It's a privilege, and I'm happy to be here. And I look forward to having more conversations and doing my best to work with you to add value to the network.
So we just published we just sent it to the printers, the Building Wealth wrap up, the hard copy, but the PDF is up. So we're going to be doing a lot more about building wealth. And of course, that's what you are. I think of you as a wealth builder.
Yes.
Yeah.
A
Whether it's
part
your,
of it, there's
yeah.
a bigger thing to it, but part of it, yes.
Well, it's whether it's your stock portfolio or your chicken coop.
That's true. Yes, absolutely.
Anyway, but we're here in Pennsylvania, which is your turf.
The
You're in
hometown
Malvern.
turf, yep.
And so we're here. It's April 27th. We're recording and we'll publish next week,
Okay.
so first week of May. Now, I said to you, Tim, I get a phenomenal amount of questions from subscribers about how do I find financial professionals. And I finally came to you and I said, can we sit down and do a detailed, in-depth conversation about how to find financial planners
Yes.
and financial professionals? And you said yes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not going to be the normal equity overview. We're going to focus on how do you find financial professionals? How do you do a search? How do you find the right person for you? And we're going to go through that in detail, then talk a little bit about how the markets have been towards the end, so we can end on a, we're finance guys, so we can end
Yes.
on
Yes.
a juicy note.
Yeah.
Anyway, so before we start in, any things you want to say, any thoughts, any questions?
I just say that to me, I hope that what people can gain out of this is to learn that there are financial professionals out there that they can work with
Right, and trust.
and trust. It's just you have to do a little bit of work to find them,
No, you
but
have to do a lot of work.
yeah. Well, yeah. But if you can find somebody that they could be very valuable to you and local to you so that you're not searching hither and yon for one person in the world.
Right. So what I would say is you're looking to create a relationship, which is a very important asset. So if you look at the financial professionals in my life, like my banker, I can go talk to my banker about anything and I can trust them and I can get good advice, and that's an asset. It's an asset to have that person, someone you can really talk to.
Yeah.
And but it takes time to build. It's like any relationship, it takes time to build. You just didn't find your husband overnight.
Right. Right.
It's not like a pizza you can order, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so before we dive into the financial part, let me just say there are two things that Salary Report subscribers care about. They care about health freedom and they care about financial freedom. And one thing they can do if they're concerned about health freedom policies, I asked you what would you recommend? So let's just dive in there. If you're worried about where they are in terms of health freedom or financial freedom, you can clear that before you go visit, right?
Yes. So just right off the bat, because we're still kind of in the tail, and to me, anymore, the only place that really has masks is our hospitals or some, even a lot of doctor's offices now don't have them
Don't
anymore.
require, yeah.
But it's still in the public discussion, so to speak. So I don't think it's unreasonable to just ask straight out, do you have COVID policies?
Right.
Do I have to wear a mask if I come to see you?
Right.
Is any of this relevant to me coming to meet you? And please
Right.
tell me now because I want to know. And then you just say, no, thank you. I'll move on to somebody else.
Right. And the same, I asked you, would you take cash or gold as payment? So.
I would personally, as a financial advisor, take cash or gold. I'm not aware of any prohibition, regulatory speaking.
Right.
I think the bigger impediment is just many advisors
For record
don't work
keeping,
that
yeah.
way.
For
They don't
record
work that
keeping,
way.
it's a lot easier to not.
Yes.
Yeah. So I can understand that because if you look at the fee levels, most people aren't walking around with that cash.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
but it's also the model, and we'll get into this, but if you're charging a percent of assets under management,
Right.
that's harder. You'd have to sell
Yeah, you
assets
can't.
or
Right.
you'd And so you, and you do, they typically do sell assets when you do assets under management. So you could do it that way. You're in effect, that's cash. That's paying cash. It's just not hard cash.
Okay, so there's a world of disclosure available on any financial professional. So before you go, there's plenty of research you can do about a person. So tell us, before you make an appointment, before you go, what can you get in terms of disclosure?
So I think the first thing to understand is that there is no legal definition of what somebody can call themselves, whether it be a financial planner, a financial advisor, an investment advisor, an insurance advisor. Most people, I think, most people, financial professionals would try to use a term like a financial advisor if they're trying to be on a maybe a higher end thing, type of offering. But within that, we'll unpack. There can be a lot of different people meeting that title in all different ways. And so the portion that you can do ahead of time is, first of all, understand that there's you it's not as easy as just saying, I need to look for somebody that says financial advisor, because it's effectively meaningless. But what do I want to achieve? So I might look for a financial planner. How do I look for that? Well, I might look for an investment professional. How do I look for that? And to narrow it down a little bit, and you can go on the there's an SEC website, there's a FINRA website, where if you look at a financial advisor near you and you want to check them, you can go on the website and at least at a minimum check to make sure they don't have any disclosures of problems, that complaints basically. And so at least that's a high level thing. And then there's some other things on here. One thing that I think is,
Now,
or we'll go ahead.
a financial planner. So the SEC has, and FINRA have the ADV brochure for investment advisors and money managers. So some people give advice and some people manage money. It's two different things. And over here in the advice world, there are lots of different names. Because so when I was an investment advisor, I was distinctly called an investment advisor, and I wouldn't say I was a financial planner. Except Texas forced us to do it, even though we insisted we weren't doing financial planning.
Yes. And Texas, you have to register with one client, which is
I know.
different for other states.
So Texas was always interesting. But anyway, so you have one basket is advice, the other is managing money. And sometimes the people who manage money also give advice, but sometimes they don't. They just manage money. And it's always funny to hear a money manager frustrated because all his clients are trying to get advice and he can't give it. So you're right. You have to unpack exactly what are the services you want and then how does it match up. Now, when I go to the ADV brochure system, does that have financial planners as well?
Yes, it has anybody that's registered as an investment advisor. Now, I'm registered as an investment advisor with the state of Pennsylvania, but not everyone is. So it's plausible you could co and so you can check on these different websites, but there's a whole section of people out there. For example, if somebody's a broker at Merrill Lynch, they don't have a form ADV because they are a broker who makes their money by selling stock, which is more old school traditional way to do it, and then making a commission. So you can We'll talk about how to kind of identify those people. To me, the clearest way to identify them is to understand how they get paid, to kind of weed out the forest for the trees.
So a broker is paid by selling you stuff. A fee-only planner is paid by you pay them a fee and they give you their best advice. A money manager is usually paid as a percent of the money they're managing. So it's a percentage of the fee.
So from a payment standpoint, I would call money managers and financial planners that have a fee as what's called fee only. There's a term. And then brokers like Merrill Lynch are commission. The confusion comes in the middle, because there are people that are in the middle. And there's a term called fee based, which in my view was created to confuse people. But I would say, really, that I would call that, instead of calling it fee based, I'd call it fee and commission. And the reason to understand that, and it's a very nuanced thing, because somebody can say, I'm fee based. I have people call me and say, oh, I know you're fee based. That's actually, let me explain this to you. Because fee based, typically people, that offer as a financial advisor that are fee-based had some business that they came out of. And it's not that it's wrong, you know, but if you can understand and have disclosure and know what you're getting, maybe it's good for you, maybe it's not. But for example, if somebody was selling variable annuities,
right,
and they have what are called trailing commissions,
right,
and then they become a financial advisor and they said, now I'm going to be financial planning and I'm going to have a fee, they don't want to give up the payment stream of those.
Right.
And so in that case, they're fee-based, or they're fee and commission.
Right.
Now that's where somebody is a legacy,
right,
commission. There are people who are active commission. So you go and you say, I'm a financial advisor and I'm going to give you advice. And all my advice happens to revolve around variable annuities. And if they don't outwardly say it, it's because that's how they get paid.
Right.
So understanding if they're even on the ADV, that's a good initial cut, because that means that people are either a traditional investment advisor doing an assets under management type managing money,
right,
or you'll find the fee only financial planners in there also.
Right.
So I would suggest you want to have somebody that has a form ADV,
right,
as the simplest way to kind of make a first cut.
Right. And you know, to me, that's part of it, because you have a baseline of disclosure.
Yes.
Right.
And you can compare apples to apples, because the format of that form is dictated by the regulatory agency. So right. you are required to list certain things in a certain way on that form.
So one of the things, if you let's say you go to your state commission and you get everybody, or you do a search and you find everybody in your state. Mm-hmm. Some are going to be on their own or associated with small firms, and some are going to be on big firms. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to financial planning and helping to get your advisor for you, do you care if it's a big firm or not?
Clearly, if you could find, there's pros and cons. If you can find somebody like I'm an individual, and so therefore I'm not being dictated to by a
right.
bigger group, but then the risk that there is people will say, well, Tim, what if you get hit by a bus? Okay. And I have a succession plan. But so I'd say that if you're part of a bigger firm, it doesn't mean you necessarily can't help the person, but they might just have more influences there where they're limited in what they can say. I don't know.
You're being nicer than I.
Okay. You can be.
I'm deeply prejudiced, because
okay.
I think a lot of the people, you know, occasionally you'll see somebody work for a big firm. They run the local office in, you know, a certain county, a rural county in Florida. They get left alone
yeah.
and get to do their own thing, mm-hmm. and they're fine. But in many cases, I think, you know, in the last 20 years, the corruption and the institutionalization, the centralization of the big firm, you know, they're pushing stuff.
They are.
And it becomes intolerable for anybody who really is going to be committed to the best interest of their individual client,
mm-hmm.
you know, and look at their client as an individual with unique needs as opposed to a member of a blob.
Yeah.
You know, I all the good people I've seen have gone out on their own,
mm-hmm.
or into small groups.
Yeah.
So
yeah, so it could be a small ensemble too. It doesn't
right.
have to just be one person, but
right.
definitely the smaller and the independent, so that they're not under. I mean, that's one thing you can ask. Are you under a larger group
right.
or not? Or are you independent? It could be we're two people, we're partners and we're independent, or it could be we're two people in an office and we're part of
right.
a bigger group. LPA, well, I don't want to say names, but there are different groups that
right.
are
but I think you're choosing an individual, and you're choosing to have a relationship with an individual, and you've got to focus on who is this individual. And
yeah.
Now, I just have to get one other thing out. I can do this, you can't. And that is, all my life, I've been willing to pay significant fees for financial advice, for a CPA. You know, I've never been price conscious when it comes to getting the best advice. And I can't tell you how many times that has saved my life. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I would just relate it to my own experience maturing in my life. So when I was a young parent, just at the home buying tools, I might buy a cheaper tool.
Right.
And then I'd learn that after 2 years, I had to buy it again.
Right.
And then over time, I said, let me buy a very quality tool, and it's still lasting 15 years later.
Right.
So it's kind of that same. It doesn't just apply in finance. It applies in quality versus not quality. And right. to me, I think buying quality matters in all aspects of life.
Right. So my first day at my summer job at Goldman Sachs, or not my first day, my first month, I was following around one of the VPs in the corporate finance.
Mm-hmm.
So I arrive at 7 a.m. and the idea is I'm going to follow him around for the day and to try and understand what he does.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, he pulls out the big cigar and starts smoking. He has 5 composition books, one for each deal he's working on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent all day listening to him, you know, talk to people about his 5 deals. And at the end of the day, he hung up and he looked at me with another cigar in his mouth and said, "Kid, trust me." He says, "Get a good CPA and a good lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
It'll make all the difference."
Yeah.
So.
That's very good advice.
Yeah, I know. So I do want to tell one silly story. I had a wonderful CPA for many years who just retired.
Mm-hmm.
But she could do our taxes last year, final year. But I was nervous. She'd sold her firm to a new company. I was a little nervous. So I got the new one hired. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, "You're both going to do my taxes."
Mm-hmm.
"So you're both going to do my 2022 taxes or 2021 taxes. And you'll just double team. And this way I'm sure that the knowledge will transition." Well, right before the filing, a series of things happened. We couldn't have her firm do it. Mm-hmm. And so he was there.
Yeah.
And I had paid double, but it was the smartest, mm-hmm. you know, it was like, phew.
But even that, just by doing that, you, even if you didn't have a crisis or whatever happened, it's a much smoother way to transfer the information to make sure it gets done right.
Right, exactly. So the last thing I want to bring up is, what is a family office? Because some people do have a family office, or they go into a there's a family office and they're able to come in. So explain a little bit about what is a family office.
Family office is typically with a much higher net worth people.
Right.
At a high end, you could look at things like Dell Computers. Michael Dell has a family office.
Right.
And he hires somebody who happens to be from a former Goldman Sachs person to run his family office. And they have, you may have big or small family offices, but they have a staff that's just dedicated to maximizing the opportunities for that family.
Right.
And typically they might connect them with other types of investments that aren't available to the public.
Right. Right. And they, you know, it depends. They're different, but they will come, you know, they'll bring in the CPA. They'll vet all the different people you use and build a team.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Right. So some people have an opportunity. Maybe they're not Michael Dell, but they have Dell invites a couple families to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And they,
or they don't have to have $1 billion, but they have significant wealth.
Right.
Enough to justify having a little a staff or somebody there. It could even just be 2 or 3 people, but
right.
you know, somebody that's focused on you and you, and not just you personally, but your family.
Right.
And looking at the transgenerational wealth that's talked about in the book by Jay Hughes, like you've mentioned before, that type of approach.
Yeah. So everybody knows one of my favorite books is Family Wealth by Jay Hughes. And it's about how to sort of match up you're growing the people in your family and educating the people in your family and doing it in a way which is productive for the financial mm-hmm. management. I love it.
Yeah.
My uncle, who I adored, hated it. He said, "You're trying to turn our family into a corporation." I said, "No, I'm not. I'm just..."
But you can do it without losing humanity, I think is the point of that.
Yeah, because Hughes' whole point is, let the people be great about what they're passionate at. And some will be passionate at things that make money, and some will be passionate at other things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. You're trying to help them each succeed at what their passion is. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then he matches up the money. So
And I think that there's also a big component of that, of the family and intra-family communication. So the earlier you can bring in the younger people and kind of get them on track for that way of thinking, to me, the way of thinking is the biggest impediment to implementing it.
Right. You want to teach your kids to be wealth builders.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's start with the most important person. That's a financial planner. So you're a fee-only financial planner. And what you're basically doing is people pay you and you're helping them achieve their goals. And, you know, part of that is they come into you a lot of times and they want you to tell them what their goals are. And you're like, no, 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 no.
Right. I mean, to me, that's the most important thing in any aspect of life is you provide the vision.
Right.
If you can provide the vision, organizing the pieces is very easy.
Right.
But so that's the biggest thing, I think. And think about, try to just spend some time. And the financial person can help you to think about what's important to you. So, well, tell me something about yourself. What's important to you? What is something you're concerned about? And it might be through the discussion that you can help them come out with that vision.
So what that means, let's say I go to the state, would I go to the state system or would I go to the FINRA system to figure out how do I find the financial planners in my area?
I would actually start on a local search because the universe of people in the state
is so many.
Is too many, right. I think. Look locally and start in a small radius and say, here's a couple of people. And you may be in a rural area that there might be nobody. You have to travel a little bit.
Right.
But so I'd say start local. But understand, if you're in maybe a more rural area and you check the local people and there's problems in terms of what you're looking at or it's not optimal, it might be worth it to you to travel a little bit.
Right.
To meet a financial professional.
Right.
But then, so you look at those people and start checking them on the...
So the ADV will let you look by state, and the state commission or you know, the securities regulator will let you look by state.
Many states, you work together with the SEC website. So you're
right.
You really only look at one website, which is simpler.
So can you use a zip code or a county? Can you...
You can. That's a good question. I think you can. I don't know. I know you can search by a name or by a individual. So you could search by a firm name or an individual. I don't know that you can. Maybe you can. I just don't remember off the top of my head, but you'd have to look at it.
So, but you can also go through the chamber. So that, you know, the Chamber of Commerce in any town is usually pretty good at helping you understand who are their members. And a lot, not everybody's a member, but a lot of people are.
Yeah.
And of course, there's also web searches.
Yeah, I would do I do both.
Right.
That's part of doing due diligence is get a lot of different information and then see if it all triangulates into somebody.
So what I find is the most important thing you need in a financial planner is somebody you trust. Mm-hmm. So they need to be competent, but you also need to be comfortable with them. And I find so many people will go interview a financial planner and they're clearly very competent, but they don't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. They don't, the personal chemistry is not right. But they don't feel like they can just say, well, it's not right for me.
Yeah, I think they should be confident in that and trust. You know, I came to know a while ago to trust my gut. Trust your gut. And right. if the feeling isn't right, just say, you know, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Right.
This doesn't feel right. Or you don't even have to say anything. Thanks, I'm going to go interview somebody else and you never go back. But
right.
I would encourage people to trust their gut. And yeah, I think I forgot what I was going to say, but you do want to, trust is not something that you instantly get.
Right. It takes time.
It takes time to build just like a relationship. And I tell people, over time, I hope to earn your trust.
Right.
You don't just give somebody trust.
Right.
And it's only as good as your last performance. It's always updating.
Although from a regulatory standpoint, you have to share an enormous amount of information with
you
them.
You do.
You have to.
You do. So I guess in that aspect of it, you have to kind of just go with your gut.
Right.
But understand you should always be vetting and checking and saying, well, what are you doing with this information? Why do you need it? It's fine. Because I should be able to explain why we need the information. But you do have to give a lot of information.
You have to give a lot of information, and I'm constantly beating on the fact that a financial professional cannot help you unless they understand you as a unique individual.
Yes.
And all the sort of investment philosophy and regulation about you have to know your customer, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It is. Knowing your customer is the basis of a good relationship. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, one of the problems I ran into was the regulators were requiring me to put more and more information and make it available digitally
mm-hmm.
about non-financial assets. So if somebody had precious metals at home, I didn't want to put that information into the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And it's one of the reasons I dropped out.
Yeah.
Can somebody stipulate, I'm happy to share all this stuff, but can you keep it offline or in your safe? Or...
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Because...
And I've said to you before, maybe, like, at least in my experience with being audited by the state, like, the requests that I've gotten for information have not been that broad. But maybe that's just my personal experience.
Well, our last request before mm-hmm. we shut down the investment advisory...
Yeah.
was overly broad.
Okay.
They wanted 100% of all client files.
Hmm.
And I called them and I said, this is a back and forth with my attorney. I said, your corporate contractors are simply have criminal records.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to share this digitally with you.
Yeah.
And what I will do is I will deliver copies of the file to you in Nashville, but I want a signed certificate that only employees of the state will have access and no corporate contractors. And you have to sign that or we're having
litigation. But the other thing I would have to ask you, I would suggest you stipulate there is that they don't make it digital. In today's world, you just take that into an office and somebody could scan it. Now it's digital, even though you gave them paper.
No, they had to say that they wouldn't make it digital. It would not go into their digital records. They would keep it in a physical safe and corporate contractors would not have access mm-hmm. to it.
So. Yeah. At least in Pennsylvania, the state has not been... had the best technology, so it's not even feasible to do. So,
good.
At least it's been a few years since the last audit, but it's good to not have good technology.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Okay, so let's go. You've prepared some questions for a financial planner. Could you just march us through some of them?
Sure. So my first question here, I'll just march us through them. So questions for a financial planner. The first one is, what is your approach to financial planning? And I think I'd suggest that when you're asking these questions, you want to ask open-ended questions.
Right.
So you don't want to say, do you do financial planning? Yes or no. You want to what, why, how,
right.
and then shut up and then let them answer.
Right.
And that's how you can kind of
get a feel. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then what is your experience and credentials and how do they apply to me?
Right.
As your client.
Right.
I don't want to hear about, how it applies to your standing in the world or this, but how does it help me personally? Because you're going to be my advisor.
Right. Right.
What is your investment approach? And a famous person once said the most important thing about an investment approach is that you have one.
Right.
So they should have one. They should be able to explain it to you. But then also, are you a fiduciary? And that's the legal term. It just means, are you legally required to stand in my shoes as the client before your own?
Right.
And that is true of anybody who has a form ADV.
Right.
Because it's set forth in the Investment Advisors Act of 1940.
Right. So you're obligated to do what is in their best interest, not yours. Right.
Legally. A legal obligation.
Right.
Yes. Do you use individual stocks? Why or why not? And can I exclude certain stocks? So that goes together with things we talk about on Solari.
Right.
No, I don't want my money in JP Morgan Chase or Pfizer. Can I accomplish that with you?
Right.
And that, so all these things, any one of these things could be a deal breaker.
Right. Right.
Are annuities and insurance products part of your advice? Because that helps you to understand who you're talking to and how they get compensated. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but you want to understand who they are, how they operate, and if they're offering annuities and insurance products, are all the solutions that are offered to me going to be annuities and insurance products?
Right.
So that's the reason to ask.
And you've probably heard me say I've never met an annuity that I like.
Yeah.
There have been rare exceptions. Now, when you say insurance products, There's a whole world of insurance that every person has to deal with, whether it's auto insurance, home insurance, life insurance. Are you talking about financial planners whose expertise covers the full gamut of all insurance versus those who don't?
Yeah, so specifically what I'm talking about is people that use, so certainly this is not talking about property and casualty insurance or even life insurance.
So you're talking about insurance investment products,
Yes.
right? What about a financial planner who, is there such a thing as a financial planner who can help you with the full range of insurance? Non-investment products, but insurance.
Yes.
Yes.
But then just the question is, are they giving you the advice about the insurance or are they selling it to you directly?
Right.
When they sell it to you directly,
There's a conflict.
yes.
Okay. Our favorite taxes.
Yeah, are taxes factored into your approach? So many times I see that people will do things in an investment portfolio and then be surprised at tax time when there's a bill. So I'd say most competent people would, at a minimum, include taxes to some degree. And then I think you actually want to try to evaluate the quality of that promise. So if you do you factor taxes? Well, what is your tax knowledge? What's your experience? How do you know what you're talking about?
Now, to what extent do you really want an advisor who's in the same jurisdiction you are so that they understand the taxes in that jurisdiction?
I think it's important.
Right.
Or they should be able to demonstrate that they understand the taxes in your jurisdiction. And there's all different. Pennsylvania, we have all these crazy local communities and stuff that
Right.
have specific taxes. So you want them to be able to just explain to you if you're interviewing somebody in another state, the taxes in your state.
So there's a real benefit if you can find somebody locally, because
Yes.
then you can find somebody you can talk to in person, not just on, email or phone. But then they have a lay of the land locally.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true.
Okay, compensation.
So we talked a little bit about this, just the terms we'll state is fee only, fee and commission, which is called fee based, which can be confusing, and commission. So ask them that and see what they say. And you would just ask them, how are you compensated? But you are understanding there are these terms. And then listen and say, what does the person say? Did they say I'm fee only? Did they say I'm fee based? Did they say I just see the more unclear the answer, the worse it is. The more clear the
You want
answer
to
and
be
direct,
totally clear about how the
yes.
money works.
Yeah.
Precious metals.
And so I said, do you advise on precious metals, like on assets like precious metals or Bitcoin? Because people, so you might want precious metals, you might not want Bitcoin. So you might get somebody that says, I do Bitcoin, but I don't know anything about precious metals. That tells you something. Or I do precious metals, and I'll talk with you about anything, but my advice is you don't do Bitcoin. That's what I say to people. But so I'd say I'd give them the opportunity to hang themselves, so to speak. Just say, here it is. Like, what do you handle any of these things? And see what the
So
answer is.
I had fun with John Titus a couple money markets ago. He said, "Give me one good reason to own Bitcoin." I said, "If you want to carry a lot of money across the border and not get stopped."
Okay.
And he looked at me and he said, "Oh my God, you're right. There is
Yeah.
he said, there is a good anyway." What about private placements at private equity, business advice? A lot of my clients, when I was an investment advisor, would be approached or have private equity opportunities or local investment opportunities. Things that could get pretty complex. Or loans or deals, they'd finance a kid or invest in a kid's business. So you get a lot of these alternative sort of sticky investments.
That's a so that was a wide range that you just laid out there. For things that are private equity or there, sometimes it'll be like, I want to invest in a wellhead or something or gold mine. And so to me, when I would suggest that you that the person, you just say, well, what is the extent of your advice? I'd say, I don't know everything. And if we're going to go into those type of realms, I have other resources and people I can consult
right.
to help do the due diligence there.
Right.
So at least understand what is your ability to handle that, but what are your limitations also?
Right.
And then how do you handle something that's beyond your limitations?
Right.
And the first thing to me is you tell them it's beyond my limitations, right. and then here's how I suggest we
handle. Oh, and it also may get time consuming. Yes. And that has to be,
yeah.
you know, that's not within the fee, so it has right. to be handled someplace else. Okay, so this of course, for us is a huge one. I always say there's an official narrative and then there's reality. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of subscribers who want to have a financial advisor who understands reality.
Yeah.
You know, understands both mm-hmm. and can navigate both. The question, what I've found is that they don't know how to ask a financial professional, you know, if they can understand and navigate between the two in a way that doesn't put them at risk. Mm-hmm. So if you're a financial planner, you're subject to regulation mm-hmm. and anything you say can be quoted mm-hmm. and misquoted and yeah. used out of context. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do we have this conversation in a way that's professional and doesn't put either one at risk, but gets to the bottom of, am I talking to somebody who understands reality as opposed to is stuck in the official narrative?
Yeah. So some of the things that I listed there are things you might want to be able to talk with your financial advisor about are things like missing money, FASB Statement 56, and then the challenges with the U.S. dollar and losing reserve status.
Right.
Out of those three, I would just start with the U.S. dollar.
Absolutely.
Because it's the most commonly talked about. And it's not going to raise a flag that's like, who is this person? Why are they asking about this crazy? It's a conspiracy theory.
Right.
So don't start with that. Start with the dollar and just say.
Right. And because the dollar is about the deterioration of the federal credit, which is yes. what the missing money in FASB 56 is about. So you can do that. And of course, the other thing I think you can talk about is the corruption, because if you look at the polls, everybody's concerned about corruption. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and what. The missing money in financial and FASB 56 is really about is the fact you can't trust a lot of the disclosure.
Yes, but just, I guess, just ask that. But that's how you get going on the discussion and just right. dive into that. But stay initially, at least in the initial discussion, stay in the dollar world and
right.
and you can kind of
well, I would say
probe and see how far you go down that road.
Yeah, I mean, the ones I would stick with is if I was doing an interview today, is I'd start with the dollar. Mm-hmm. And you know, the dollar is losing market share. If that accelerates, what does it mean to me? How do I protect myself? Corruption. Mm-hmm. Because what we've seen in the latest bank workouts here in this country and the Credit Suisse workout in Switzerland is, I mean, just the law thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. And so it's very scary.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do I deal with the corruption? But you can also worry about war. I mean, if you look at the drumbeats of war in a variety of different ways, you know, that could happen. Mm-hmm. So, and if we go back over 100 years of investing, war was always the big, you know, the mm-hmm. big danger. So just between those three, you can cover a lot of territory without saying or doing anything that would make someone nervous from a regulatory standpoint.
Yeah. And even like the war, well, do I own stocks in Europe?
Right.
What does it mean if there's a war? What happens to my investments? Or,
right.
you know, so there are real examples you can bring up that aren't, you know, that are very common.
Right. Right. Custodian. This is one that's very important to me.
Yes.
So if it's a financial planner and you're just getting advice, then the only custodian you have to worry about is where's your data. But if it's a money manager or they're helping you find money managers, there really is a question, where is your money?
Yes.
Right.
And to be clear, the custodian is where your money is held.
Right.
Some people, there are brokerage firms that have a brokerage name and then they say they clear through
blah, blah.
The custodian.
Right.
You know, the big names, when you have big names, like well-known names like Fidelity and Vanguard, the broker and the custodian have the same name. That's called self-clearing.
Right.
And then if you have an independent person, they might have my name, and it might be a place like Charles Schwab or Pershing. Those are big custodians.
Right.
And then to me, the challenge, you definitely want to know where your money's held.
Right.
An example of somebody who was the custodian and was the investment advisor is Bernie Madoff.
Right.
And so that was, if, for example, you're usually your, or always, your statement is going to come from your custodian. So for Bernie Madoff, you said, "Bernie, where's my statement?" He said, "Hold on, I'll print it up." So you want to get your statement from the custodian is a third party, and you can check directly with that third party that your money's there. So that's an important thing. And then I guess the question with the custodian comes down to, in today's world, who's my custodian? It's a big custodian. Should I be concerned about that? I would suggest that you do want a substantial custodian because you don't want to play games with where the money is. Are they part of the,
Yeah, they're all part of
they
the
all are part of it, but you.
they're part of the infrastructure. So you're
Yes.
not going to have a good custodian that's not a huge firm.
Right.
That's how it is.
Right. There's a, if you have a small custodian, there's a risk
Right.
that something might happen.
Well, I would say the Texas Bullion Depository is a small custodian,
They are.
relatively, but I'm not
Yes,
that concerned.
it's hard to make. I guess you can never make blanket statement.
Right. That's true. Okay. How often do you meet, and what does a first year look like?
So that will get into what are we going to be talking about, and how broad is your advice? So in the first year, what are we talking about? Are we talking about the first meeting I typically do with people is a spending plan, but if you're an investment-only person, then you say, well, here, the first year is four meetings of investments, and the next year is four meetings of investments. That tells you something. You say, well, we do financial, we do investments, then we do a retirement meeting, then we do a tax planning meeting. That tells you something. So just listening and understanding what that would look like helps you to kind of create a picture in your mind and understand the type of advice that you're going to get.
So we just published the whole Building Wealth curriculum, and a lot of it revolves around integrating living equity with financial equity. And one of the things I discovered when I became an investment advisor was you had a lot of both money managers and financial planners who basically were trying to take liquidate all the assets of the client and move them into the national security state. And then they only wanted to meet four times a year to tell you that you didn't have enough money and you needed to get more money to put into the national security state. And meantime, your kids were, taking out student loans, and your kids were not eating organic food, and all the stupid stuff was going on because you needed $25 million in the national security state or you would not be safe. Meantime, so you're stripping your living equity, to put lots of financial equity here, and the whole thing makes absolutely no sense. So part of it is there are financial planners who understand that you're trying to optimize financial and living equity together. And there are other people who are just, they're all trained to put everything into the financial equity. You're going to have to sort that out. You're going to have, and this is a question where you can help sort that out.
And part of it is just, are you building money for money's sake?
Right.
If your answer is, we're going to beat the S&P 500 consistently all the time, that's the only thing I'm focused on, how does that tie to my living equity? And to me, your financial assets should be subordinate to your living goals and your vision. But that will come out. So if you say, well, the first meeting year, I need to get to know you a little bit. And we'll do financial triage. We'll if there's things on fire, we'll take care of those, and we'll talk about taxes, and we'll review your insurance and that kind of thing. That's one type of service. And if it's just investment only, and the question is not even asked, how does this relate to your life? That can be a differentiator.
So that's important to me because, when I was first saving, risk management wasn't that big a deal. There wasn't a whole lot of risk, as long as you weren't stupid, there wasn't a whole lot of risk. Now you can see one healthcare risk destroy, millions and millions of dollars. And so risk management becomes much, much more important. So being smart about insurance and making sure you've got your whole insurance area covered, you know what you're doing, you've made your sound choices, that's much more important than it was 20 years ago. So
It is. It's interesting, even going through the process of getting like a life insurance quote in today's world and looking at how the underwriting is handled and the questions that are asked. And it's interesting to me when I think about it from the insurance company standpoint, I don't even think that they're asking the questions they should be asking. So they're focused on the old paradigm. They're not asking, do you have myocarditis? Did you have a vaccine? What are the implications on, because that's going to affect the payout over time of that company.
So I don't know, Lucy, we just published an interview with Lucy Commissar, who did a deep dive on three insurance companies that have been bought out, two have been bought out by private equity firms.
Okay.
And so a whole world of people have these insurance products. But meantime, if you look at what's happening quietly to the credit of their institution, it's terrifying. And they don't know it because they bought in at one price, assuming a certain credit, and that credit's being drained out the back door, and they don't know it.
There's a local health system that I won't name, but it was run by private equity. And it was they the health system lost their nonprofit status because they weren't nonprofit. They were running a straight private equity business. They couldn't do the local hospital. They couldn't sustain it. And the hospital went bust. They sold it to a different health provider. And when the health provider came in to take over the hospital, they couldn't do it right away because the private equity people had taken all the wiring out of the walls. And the local community couldn't understand why that hospital wouldn't open right away. And they had to explain to me, but we have to rewire all the walls. So there's that private equity thing that to me, it
Scary.
is.
But what it tells me is if you have an insurance product, you have to monitor it.
Yeah.
You have to monitor it, or you have to have somebody, you have to have a financial planner who will monitor it for you, because it's not just, oh, I buy it and I don't think about it for 20 years,
Yeah.
as those days are over.
Yes.
The other thing is, you what was I going to tell you about insurance? I priced, somebody needed an annuity. They needed a life insurance plus an annuity. And I priced it with what I consider to be the best quality company in the country versus another one that was brought in by the broker to just show me, something more competitive.
Yeah.
The difference was dramatic. And this one, the competitive one, looked much more attractive. I wouldn't have touched it with a 10-foot pole because it wouldn't achieve the purpose. This one was, was the gold standard. And you had to pay up a lot for the gold
Yeah.
standard.
And understand that companies, insurance companies that are a lower quality will lead with a higher payout to bring in business. And the risk to that over time is that they won't be able to deliver on that promise.
Like a lot of other people these
Yes.
days.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's turn to investment advisor. Same question. What's your investment approach? Are you a fiduciary? What is your experience and credentials? Are you open to things like precious metals and Bitcoin? So we're going through a lot of the same. But this is where the rubber meets the road. Is there an area of focus for you, like stocks or value growth? How do you make investment decisions? Can I exclude certain stocks?
But that particular one maybe is more important on an investment advisor because different people have different approaches and they could do, like you said, they have certain styles. We're a small value investor, we're a large growth investor. And you want to understand that because you might want to have, if they're very narrow, you might like it and it might be appropriate, or it might not be appropriate. You might need other things then also. So you have to understand that.
So for many people, they don't understand growth versus fat. Those are financial terms. And one of the things I always tell them is Investopedia.
Yeah.
A lot of this is learning 200 words.
It is. It is. The simplest way for me, value to me, are lower priced stocks, growth that their price of their stock is more in line with the value of the company. It's called the book value. Growth stocks are things like Amazon, Google. It's all those ones that you saw when the stock market went up after COVID, blowing the lid off the stock market. So and the value companies, I give examples like Kmart and Spam. Spam in a can. Many people have had that in the past, but that's a value company.
Okay, so Same questions, annuity insurance pro. A lot of the complaints I get from, now we're talking, I'm assuming if we're talking investment advisor, we're talking about somebody who manages money.
Yes.
So a lot of the money managers complain that people think that they're going to get a financial plan from an investment advisor. And that's not what you're getting. You're getting somebody who manages money,
Yeah.
right? So, but again, the annuities and insurance products come up. Now, do you find money managers doing a lot of these?
Of doing insurance products.
Yeah.
It's people that are associated with an insurance company. And the reason, so one of the things in the beginning here is a document by the SEC that talks about variable annuities. And typically you will get somebody who's an investment advisor that is offering variable annuities because which are investment insurance products or insurance products that focus that use investments. And they will so they will offer these things and they're called variable annuities. What you learn in the SEC document, which we could provide a link to, is that variable annuities, one of the biggest benefits or selling points of an annuity is tax deferral. A traditional IRA, a tax deferral means you don't pay tax now, you let it grow, and when it comes out later, you pay tax. An IRA offers tax deferral. You get it, if you put money into your IRA now, you might be able to take a deduction. It's going to grow and not be taxed, but when it comes out later, it's going to be taxed. If you have overlap of annuity and IRA, that's a red flag. And there's the old saying, was it Willie Sutton who said, why do you rob banks? He said, because that's where the money is. Why do you put variable annuities inside of the IRA? Because that's where the money is. So, and when you do that, the risk to those, and this goes together with the insurance provider, but the main risk is those annuities have conditions that force you to lock the money up. And so you may be signing up for something, and if you don't understand those lockup provisions,
So
it's
that's
very hard to get out of it without paying a lot of money.
the reason I say I never met an annuity I liked, with rare exception, was if you look at what you can do with a very conservative fixed income portfolio, you can maintain complete control and build an annuity for yourself.
And
If you,
that's if you think about what is the insurance company doing,
right, that's what they're
that's what they're
doing.
doing. You just do it for yourself.
So the one thing I would say with any complex, because I consider variable annuities a complex financial product, you have to take the time to understand it. And you can't rely on anybody else. You have to understand what you're doing.
And I would say that every person should expect that they can understand any investment product at a fundamental level and have it explained to them in a way they understand. And if they can't understand it, it
Don't
doesn't
do
matter.
it.
Don't do it. It doesn't matter if it's the
Don't
best
do
thing
it.
since sliced bread.
So how can I encourage people to feel confident that they can demand that from a financial professional?
I think going down the road of the commission will help to. I think, you know, I think it would just be, I need to be able to understand this and be confident in that. I say I'm not an investment expert. That's why I'm coming to see you. But I think that I should be able to understand this. So can you explain it to me?
So I think I've have I told you the story about the mortgage portfolio? So I had a wonderful teacher in Bible class in Washington, and she came to me and she said, "All my money except my home is in my 401k, and I'm trying to choose these products at my law firm, and I don't understand, and the woman who runs it is really mean, and I feel stupid. And could you help me? You know, I want to do this mortgage portfolio, but I don't understand it. And it's my only money. I have to understand it. I have to understand it." And so she got me the prospectus, and it's on mortgages. So it's a mortgage portfolio, right? And I'm the former assistant secretary of housing and a former partner at Dillon Reed. And I'm like, I run my own financial investment bank, but I can't understand it. Okay. I can't understand it. So I said, "Well, can I get an appointment with a mean woman who, you know, at your law firm who?" So I get on the phone with her, and she is so mean to me. I mean, she's just, because I'm asking questions, because I can't understand this mortgage portfolio. So she's yelling. I mean, she's really mean. And finally, I stopped her and I said, "You know, I don't mean to pull rank here, but I have an MBA from Wharton. I was a partner of a leading Wall Street firm.
Yeah.
I was the assistant secretary of housing. I ran the mortgage markets for the whole country. And now I run an investment bank, and we are the lead financial advisor to HUD, you know, or, you know, and did all the, you know, $10 billion of mortgage deals, you know. So I'm not stupid.
Right.
So if I can't understand this, there's a problem.
Yeah.
So suddenly she just cracked. She broke down and she admitted she didn't understand it, which is why she was being so mean. And I said, look, we're three smart women.
Yeah.
We should be able to figure this out between our different skills together. Mm-hmm. You're a lawyer. I'm an investment banker. Yes. Lisa's smart. You know, and so we spent the next half an hour going through and we finally figured it out.
Yeah.
You know, but it was funny because she, you know, what you can tell was this product was intentionally designed to make it almost impossible to understand what was going on.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I remember being asked about an oil and gas investment and I didn't understand it. And I got in touch with somebody who does it for a living. And his only comment to me was, he said, I do this for a living and I write these documents and I give a scale of 1 to 10 on the clarity. This document has a level of 1 in terms of clarity.
Wow.
And so that's what I said to my client, I'm not an expert in this, but somebody who is, on a scale of 1 to 10, gives it a 1 for clarity. And therefore, if he can't understand it, I can't understand it. You can't understand it. Don't do it. And he didn't do it.
Right. It's a, I remember once getting a client out of a, or I tried to get them all the way out, but I got them partly out of a solar deal that was totally fraudulent. Mm-hmm. And the first flag was that the documents were just, it was so impossible to understand what they were doing.
That's one reason why for family offices, they want to have somebody to help them, because a lot of these things, for those type of crazy, different investments, private equity or things, they assume that you're wealthy. It's there's a specific definition of being a wealthy person. It's called Regulation D.
Right.
But they assume that you can do the due diligence.
Right.
You have the capacity. Right. So it's on, the burden's on you to understand it.
Sounds like it's too much work.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, we go through the how are you compensated and then the tricky questions. And I don't think there's any change between how you would handle it with a financial planner, how you would handle it with a...
No.
But it's, to me, it's even more important that somebody who's managing money understands the systemic risks in the marketplace.
And there are also different, the reason some of these overlap is because you may not initially know what kind of person you're talking to. So if you go down the financial planner road and they really are answering only things that sound like investments, then you kind of go down and say, this is more of an investment person. Or if you go down the investment road and everything they're talking about are annuities and insurance, and you said, well, no, now I need to kind of take a turn over here. So you...
So one of the things that comes up is you get these wonderful financial professionals who are busy their whole life being successful. And then they discover, they look under the carpet for the first time, they discover reality, they get scared to death. And the next thing you know, they're like Chicken Little. The whole thing's going to collapse tomorrow because they don't understand the system. You know, they understand that the official reality is not true.
Yeah.
They've gotten that far, but they become collapse nuts. It's all going to collapse tomorrow. It's the end of the world. And, you know, many, many times since in the last 20 years, I end up trying to protect clients from betting the ranch on prophecy. So it's all going to collapse in the next 3 months. Or I have a perfect black box and it says blah, blah. And so that's the future and you can bet the ranch on that. And, you know, we do a lot with scenario planning because my attitude is future's unknowable. And, you know, we should be inventing the future, not trying to predict it or bet the ranch on a given future.
Yeah.
So how do you handle the people who come in a panic and, you know, overly afraid because somebody's told them it's all going to collapse? How do you handle that?
I try to handle it by just bringing things into today's discussion, into the present. Say, can we agree that things aren't going to collapse next week? Why or why not? If we think they are, then tell me about that. Let's talk about it.
Right.
If you think it's going to collapse within next 3 months, okay, what do you think is going to happen? Let's talk about that. And by talking about that, I just say, well, what if it didn't happen?
Right.
What if this happened instead?
Right.
Could you allow for the fact that maybe something else might happen? And kind of start to help them.
Well, but if you look at the numbers, their wealth is being stolen for the last 20 years every day by inflation.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not a big bang out there. It's right now, and it's eating you alive right now.
It's death by a thousand cuts.
Right, right.
So how can you stop getting cut every day?
Right.
To slow the burn rate on your assets, kind of.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So we talked about taxes, custodian. This is a great question. What limitations do you have on advice to clients?
Yeah. I think that's a great limitation for everybody. Yeah. A great question for everybody.
Right, right.
Because everybody has limitations, in my view. If somebody says, I have no limitations, I'd say, I don't know about that. You know, there are always limitations, and that helps you to kind of figure out it's just as important what they do as what they don't do. And that helps you to understand who they are. So I guess, and you have to compare the limitations to your due diligence.
Right.
So you say, okay, well, I don't do, or I do this, or I don't do this. And just check the ADV or check the document and say, well, your documents say this. How come this doesn't match? Most, I would hope that what they're saying doesn't actually matches their documents, but it's a way to double check.
Right. So I used to have, you know, there used to be an expression on Wall Street that, you know, a point of view was worth 80 points of intelligence. You know, knowing your point of view. Mm-hmm. So one of my points of view is, you know, I don't like speculation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to speculate, you know, take a portion and go play and think of it as a form of entertainment. Maybe it works and maybe it doesn't.
Yes.
And there are ways of doing speculation. You know, there's sort of rules of how to do it smart. You know, if you want to do that, fine, but it's not.
That's a great point that many people do. I do also. If somebody's insistent on a particular speculation, we just give them a play account. Let's take a small amount of money. Let's do it.
Right.
And I've done this with people over the years, different things, marijuana stocks or whatever.
Right.
And then more times than not, it didn't work out.
Right.
Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it can work out. It's not like it can never work out, but at least you're not.
For the big long-term pumps and dumps, it can work out.
Yeah.
So I've had subscribers who literally said, okay, crypto is a pump and dump.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play it. Because I have a chance of getting my family out of California.
Okay.
If I play it and and they did it smart and it worked.
But they went into it with that view.
Right.
That they were going to play it and that it was fixed and that they were going to try to optimize it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the guy was an engineer. Very smart.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can do that. Okay. Yeah. Insurance. Questions for an insurance provider. Now, if I want an insurance expert, how do I find it other than a broker? I mean, all the insurance experts I use are brokers.
Yes.
Is there such a thing as an insurance?
There is. You can Google. There's a handful of people that do consulting. And really what they're consulting on are more expensive life insurance questions. And even those evaluating those investment products that have life insurance, evaluating those.
Right.
But for everything else, you probably are going to speak to somebody. And I'd say just maybe what I would say is separate your insurance from your investments.
Right.
Understand the purpose of each. And most likely, I'd suggest you're better off having insurance for insurance and having investments for investments and not combining them. So
I'm always astonished at how little I know about insurance. I'll never... I have speeding tendencies.
Okay.
And Tennessee is one long speed trap, which means I've taken four courses taught by state troopers on how to, you know, you have to take these courses to avoid the points. And they're very informative. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very informative about how to drive and stay alive.
Yeah.
And so I've learned an awful lot. But one of the things they will go through is insurance and what kind of insurance you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
I got one guy who was clearly very interested in insurance. And what I learned in 15 minutes about how to, you know, I thought I had the best auto insurance in the world until he got a hold of me. And then I was like, you know, I was at Farm Bureau the next day. Wait a minute. I want to add a codicil to my insurance.
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned a lot about when people have accidents, what happens and how to protect yourself with the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So learning, I think it's very, very important to get the maximum out of your, you know, your home insurance, your car insurance. And I'm finding insurance companies are more and more, you know, it's more and more important to have an honest insurance company and to really understand exactly what you're insured for and what you're not?
It's one case because I've talked a lot about brokers and kind of in a negative context with investments, but I found that local brokers, insurance brokers,
are remarkably good.
Yeah, because they're not tied, they're not captive to one agency.
Right.
So they'll look across and this company offers this, this company offers this, and it just naturally leads the discussion, well, why is this one more expensive or not? And what are, is this more coverage or not? So they're in more of a natural position to evaluate and give you advice, I think, as an insurance broker for property and casualty and stuff like that.
But this is an area where you have to invest the time.
Yeah.
And it takes time. And I think most people just, you know, buy insurance. I've got car insurance. I don't need to think about it.
Yeah. You can. I just say you understand that you can optimize the insurance that everyone has, the property and the casualty and the auto, and learn about that. And even things like what is my deductible level and what is comprehensive? What is collision? What is...
One of the tricky ones, and I've written pieces about this because I went for about 10 years with no health insurance. Mm-hmm. And I chose to do it. And then I ended up doing one of these Christian self-insurance groups, mm-hmm. and which was very good. But if you look at reports from doctors about the insurance companies are literally, you know, they have to pre-qualify everything they do before they do it. Mm-hmm. with the insurance company, and they're still only getting 25 to 50% reimbursement, and it's war.
Yeah.
And more doctors are saying, you're liable for your bill. So if your insurance company doesn't, you know, we'll submit it to the insurance company, but if they don't pay, you're liable. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing in the subscriber group is a lot of people just walking away and saying, you know, the whole thing's a fraud.
Yeah.
We're out. And they'll do the self-insurance group, or they'll, I've even had subscribers who move to foreign countries because the foreign health care system is fantastic mm-hmm. compared to ours.
Yeah.
So.
But you can also do a lot, in my experience, taking steps on your own. That's not everything. There's certain things you need a doctor, you need more expertise. But at the core of personal health, a lot of it is things that you can do on your own. You just have to learn about it and be willing to do it.
Right, right. We just had a wonderful subscriber and a team member go to the Joe Dispenza, the latest week-long retreat where people get these amazing healings, you know, and they're healing themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's back to this is more economic.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
I got one email. He said, this is the future. The pharmaceutical industry is toast.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
That's good news. Okay. What are the upfront and ongoing commissions in the insurance products that you offer, and will those be made transparent to me if I decide to engage in one of them?
So that's a very important. And understand there are two categories of fees on an insurance product that's an investment. Mm-hmm. There is an upfront commission that they will not probably tell you and you won't know. And then there is what's called...
How can they not tell you?
I don't know if you can legally compel them to tell you. Usually they might say something like, the insurance company pays me, don't worry about it, or this kind of thing. I think you can... It will be a very tough effort, which just tells you if it's that tough an effort to figure out what the commission is, you probably...
Don't want to do it. Right.
But then the other aspect to that are surrender fees. And surrender fees, so if you think about what happens in this product, they sell a product, the person sells a product, they get a big commission.
Right.
The insurance company is now on the hook.
Right.
So in order for the insurance company to not lose money, they say, if you take it out in the first year, you're going to pay 7%. If you wait another year, you'll take out 6%.
Right.
And so on. The most egregious one I've ever seen was a 20-year surrender charge schedule.
Oh, my God.
And when we looked into the investments inside of it, there was a whole methodology about following the S&P 500. And I got the guy to admit, the insurance broker who said it, that really none of it applies because there's a core rate that bumps along because they're basically putting in bonds and they have a guaranteed rate. There's all this complexity to it. But
right.
So you basically want to have a clear understanding of that. And if you can't get a straight answer, I would walk away, because if you don't have the answers and you commit to this, you could be locked up in something right. and it would be very expensive for you to get out of it.
Right. Right. So I constantly used to run into situations where complexity would cause people to get tricked.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would just tell people complexity, only have enough complexity that it serves what you're doing.
Right.
You don't need any more complexity than that.
Right.
And if there is, and on top of that, you don't understand it, then you should not be involved with
that. One thing I used to always run into, the fact is you get these very interesting trading systems and they work until the day they don't work,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, but you get these true believers, and I ran into a group of true believers on why their system would work. And I said, look, your system is going to work until the day it doesn't work. And here are the reasons why it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it was one of these situations where you had a pension retirement system that if the portfolio dropped in value, the practice had to make up the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you couldn't afford to take a huge debt.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so it was war. They mm-hmm. won. They go in. Boom. First year, system doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you could even look at big public examples like Long-Term Capital years ago in 1998.
Right, right.
With Nobel laureates who have the system they created. It's the right. best system, and they went belly up.
Right, right. Estate taxes, very important. Estate and state inheritance taxes. So
first of all, understand what estate tax... When you say the estate tax, typically what most people are thinking of is a federal estate tax. And right now, that only applies to very wealthy people.
Right.
Because of the tax law that changed in 2018. But it's been, right now, it's north of, I think, $13 million now, because it's indexed for inflation
right.
per person. So if you're a married couple, it's 20. If you're not more than $26 million
right.
or close to it, you're not going to pay federal estate tax.
Right.
But it's been up and down over the years. And my favorite one was 2010, where there was none. And George Steinbrenner died in that year.
Wow.
So you kind of wonder about that. But so probably unless you're in that category, you know, super high net worth, or even as an individual in the 10
you
million
just have
plus.
To worry about the state.
Worry about the state. And in my experience, there's a lot of the state inheritance taxes that are very hard to plan around or that you can't.
Right.
And so then you strategies... This is one place where life insurance can come in sometimes. And,
yes.
And you talk about things, it commonly comes up in like a
life
family farm.
Life insurance can really protect a family, because I run into it on family farm all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great use of life insurance.
Yeah.
Right.
Because a family farm is the example where you have this asset, but it's not liquid. It's not easily sellable.
Right.
But when you transfer it to the children,
right.
there's a tax change there. There's a transfer that's taxable. And so if you buy life insurance to pay that bill...
Right.
That can be very effective.
Yeah. I if you have a family farm, you definitely want that.
Yeah.
One thing I'm a great believer in is some of the terrible mistakes I've seen clients make are going to a tax attorney to work out how they do their estate and their will. I'm like, no, 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 no. And I always would send somebody to Ann Christensen is a retired trust officer.
Mm-hmm.
She's been on the Salieri Report several times. She just did a solution series with Corey Lynn. And I said, sit down with somebody who's an expert on estates. It could be your financial mm-hmm. planner. It could be somebody like Ann who does estates. Figure out what you're trying to achieve in the human system. Figure out what you want to achieve. And for God's sakes, don't give up control unless you absolutely have to in a world like we're in today.
Yeah.
So... And then figure out what you want to do. Then after you've designed the whole thing out, then you go to an attorney,
yes.
but not before.
And so that is absolutely the most important thing, because what do you want to accomplish can involve naming people in different capacities.
Right.
And you want to know that before you go talk to the attorney.
Right.
But to me, the biggest thing I tell people is go to an attorney that does estates and trusts,
right.
estate planning attorney, not your buddy who's a real estate attorney who does wills on the side.
Right.
It's not that he can't do a will, but he may not be all as informed about all the intricacies of it.
My sister is an estates and trust expert
okay.
attorney.
Yeah.
And she used to always get mad because I would always want to use the software.
Okay.
You know, I would like to
those different NOLO and things like that.
Yeah,
and
because they help you think it through.
Yeah.
they help you think it through. And she would get very angry at me. I said, don't depend on the software. Just use the software to, like, think.
Well, you can use it to educate yourself, for sure.
Exactly. It's just like my general counsel. When I use Wikipedia, she gets furious. It's like, you know, for 90% of the time, it's fine. You know, what is a bond?
Everybody else is subject to the internet. I think doctors were the first people to be shocked by that. Right? So, I read on the internet I have this, but it's true. I read on the internet about investments. I read on the internet about my will. So everybody should be subject to it.
Okay, so again, you know, you said to the insurance, what limitations do you have in your advice to clients?
Yeah.
So, you know, I come back to where we started, which is you're trying to find somebody that you create a relationship with, and it takes time and, oh, we forgot tax preparers.
Okay.
We got to do tax
preparers. Yes, we do.
This one is so important.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, it's interesting when you if you learn about this that there you do not have to be licensed to prepare taxes.
That's true.
And that's because of a court case that was decided a number of years ago. But generally speaking, the most common is a CPA.
Right.
And then I happen to be something called an enrolled agent.
So you're an enrolled agent. Yes. Now, what I have to say is, you know, the feds were pretty tricky because now they've literally created an obligation for you to be an enforcement arm of the IRS.
I don't know that there's always a tension, but that's a tension there with CPAs too.
Right.
It's constantly the IRS saying, you know, as a tax preparer, you have to fill out certain due diligence checklists.
Right. Right.
I asked about this. I asked about this. You have the ability to rely on a statement of somebody,
right?
As long as it's not patently questionable,
right?
So there's always that give and take, and there's always tension between tax preparers, even CPAs, who are always pushing back on the IRS and saying, "Well, you know, we're not your enforcement arm."
Right.
To me, it's you have the same kind of duty as like an attorney that I don't disclose what we talk about.
Right.
You have tax forms. Right. You have some forms that are sent through e-file if you're doing that, other things that aren't, and you should be clear about that. And the biggest thing to me that you want to do with a tax preparer is understand whatever you're doing to avoid future dealings with the IRS. So
I always have somebody doing my taxes. Mm-hmm. I would never do my own taxes. And I have lots of colleagues who do their own taxes because they're like, this saves me money. And I said, no, I would never do because I want to prove I had every intention to comply.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if I have somebody preparing my taxes and they've gone through the whole thing, and if we make a mistake, it's an honest mistake.
Yeah.
And I can prove it's an honest mistake because they're, you know, they're expert and they're certified, you know, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So
I do think those terms like CPAs are licensed by the State Board of Accountancy.
Right.
An enrolled agent like me is licensed by Department of Treasury. Well, hold on. What, are you working for the government? No.
Right.
And then there are tax attorneys.
Right.
Those are the three categories of people that can do what's called represent taxpayers before the IRS.
Right.
It's under something called Circular 230 of the IRS, and they have an Office of Ethics at the IRS.
Right.
So those people have certain... basically, when you're looking for a tax preparer, I'd say you want... A tax attorney is really only if you're dealing with higher...
You're getting into some more complex and
more
sophisticated
complex
investments.
Yeah. Otherwise, CPA and enrolled agent, not all CPAs prepare taxes, but many... So you want CPAs that focus on it. They do tax preparation.
Right.
Enrolled agents all focus on tax preparation because it's very limited.
So I love the idea of a financial planner who also does the taxes because then they have all the information
mm-hmm.
and it's integrated. So... It's always difficult when you have to go from this person to this, you know, the financial planner's here, the money manager's here, the CPA is here, the tax preparer, you know, and that's why people end up with family offices so they can have it.
Yes.
Right.
And I used to work at in New York at the J.P. Morgan Private Bank years ago, and I was told not to tell them. So if you said, well, you always say on the phone, I'm sorry, I can't give tax advice. And I would know the answer.
Right.
I said, why can't I tell them? Well, it's because of risk mitigation and this. And so that's what led me to go down this road.
Right.
Because if you say, well, if we sell this investment, what happens with the taxes?
Right.
It's a natural pairing, I think.
Right. So I just want to point out, you know, because everybody's used to me, you know, I always, the poster child for corruption is JP Morgan Chase. So I would like to point out, I used to bank at JP Morgan Chase, private banking. While you were working there, I was banking
there. Yes. I call myself a refugee of JP Morgan. I don't know if you would do that, but.
So, I know you have chickens, and I know you have moved and live on the land, and you have a much more, I would say, you have a much more living equity balance, financial equity strategy, personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do clients ever, you know, can they talk to a good financial planner about all of that?
Yeah, for me they can, and I think anybody.
But because, spending plans and getting your spending plan.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that impacts spending.
Right.
Have you looked at the cost of eggs during, you know, the bird flu? And
right.
So this.
I was going to buy stocks, but I thought I'd have an omelet instead.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the markets. And before we close out on financial professionals, this has been unbelievably useful, Tim. And I know we went through it carefully, but if you look at all the questions I've got, I said, look, we just have to go through this.
Yeah. I think the main thing is that people should be confident to ask the questions.
Right.
It's okay if you don't know the answer.
Right.
And you can ask somebody a question where you don't know the answer. And if they don't explain it to you in a way you can understand, then that's not helpful. Then you don't work with that person.
Right. But you're trying to take the time to build, to find someone where you can build a relationship that becomes an asset.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to do.
I saw something years ago. It was with regard to education, but the statement was made that children are natural people who ask questions, and the challenge is to remain a child as you grow up.
Right.
I think many times adults feel like, you know, I can't tell people that I don't know the answer. And if you can get past that limitation, just say, I'll ask anything. If I don't understand, explain it to me, please. It's like a watershed that you can just kind of free yourself and just get comfortable to asking questions all the time.
I don't know why moving to Hickory Valley helped me tremendously. I said to one person, I moved to Hickory Valley, it took me 2 years, but they finally taught me English. And now I feel free to ask questions. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the markets, because this has been another year where I'm fighting the collapse beat.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you know, because I am doing, I have another company and I am doing screens.
Yeah.
I have companies that I really have a deep affection for.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever the market drops, I'm like, ooh, a sale.
Yeah. Yes.
Discounts, bargains.
Yeah.
Anyway, so talk to us a little bit about what this year has been like so far.
In my view, that we've kind of been going sideways in a lot of respects, but with a significant volatility, or the ups and downs.
Right.
My favorite thing was to have a banking crisis in the middle of tax season. So to be answering questions on both fronts.
That's right. That's
at the
true.
Same time.
Right.
But if you kind of take a step back and look at the chart of a longer term period, yeah, there were significant ups and downs, but it's kind of just going sideways
in
a big range here. And we're waiting. There's positive things that could happen, I guess. There's also very negative things that could happen. And
it's interesting because there are very strong inflationary trends,
mm-hmm.
and very strong deflationary trends. And you keep wondering, you know, are they just going to balance out, or is one going to take over and go?
And historically, stocks have outpaced inflation over long time periods.
Right.
It doesn't mean they do it every single year, but
right.
So to me, that's why you do want to have stocks, but you want to, I'd suggest, have a longer term view. It's kind of, you know, and get to things like you do, you know, understand what you own.
Right.
But then just get comfortable with it and don't try to get in and out on a short term basis.
So it was funny because, you know, if you look for systems, the one system I think really works is to be long until and unless it turns to a bear.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, you know, a bear begins at 25 to 35 down. How many times have we gone 25 to 35 down and then come back up again?
Look at COVID.
Right.
That down was 35% exactly.
I know.
And it was like a V. It went straight up.
You know, the guys at the Fed read the same, you know, books I do.
Yes, right.
Right. So they know 35, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So, or the exchange stabilization fund.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the ESF guys.
Yeah.
So, so it sounds simple. And if you look at, if you traded it that way for the last 100 years, you would have made a fortune. It sounds simple until you try and call it down.
Yeah.
And or call a bear. It's turned into a bear. That's hard to call. It's one of the reasons I love Rambus.
Yeah.
Is I think he's got a natural gift at sort of thinking about those things.
I also think the systems work well when you're doing what's called paper trading. You're just...
Right.
You don't have your money at risk. When you put your life savings on the line, your decisions change.
Right.
Because you...
So one thing that is different is we have higher interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And now a saver can get a fixed income with some kind of return.
Mm-hmm.
But interest rates does change. You know, it does change. Now, the average credit card interest rate for the average American has been 17% all along.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's so much fat in that margin.
Right. Right.
They don't have, they can get away with it.
Right. But higher interest rates really does change a lot. So
yeah.
What does it mean to your clients that...
A lot of my clients are savers by definition if they became my clients because they had some amount of assets or some need to manage assets. And so that's a benefit to people who've been savers because over the last 10 years, savers have really been at a loss
right.
to earn a return on fixed income or on cash.
Right.
And so then it's just about trying to get exposure, get a higher rate, but don't subject yourself to the risk if rates went up further or... continue to go up even modestly. So
my favorite doctor says that during the pandemic, there were the three greatest causes of death were fear, fear, and fear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's the same in finances as it is in health. How, you know, to navigate this environment, you have to live with, you know, tremendous volatility and uncertainty in terms of what the scenarios might be, but you have to stay out of fear.
Yeah.
So how does somebody do that?
I would say you want to have something, a portion of your investments that are appropriate for a fear scenario. And then if you have somebody to help you, their job is to remind you. Sometimes people forget they have that.
Right.
They might have something that's great. They might own a bond they can hold to maturity for 3 months and the market's collapsing. And they're like, oh, the market's... but have you looked at your investments?
Right.
You're not losing any money because of what your investment is. Like, oh, if they have to kind of snap out of...
So this is what would always happen to me. Somebody would be afraid of a collapse. And mm-hmm. so they would take a 10% position in precious metals,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was very conservatively
mm-hmm.
in a really good custodian or it was mm-hmm. in Switzerland or they had it, you know, in a safe. And you know, but the market, we'd be in a bull market. And they'd say, they'd call me and they'd say, my precious metals has done very badly this year.
Yeah.
I said... That's central bank insurance. Of course it's done badly because luckily this, you know, the world is
right.
The markets are doing well. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, it should do badly.
It's insurance. If it's insurance, you don't celebrate if you don't get in an accident in the car.
Right.
You know, that's the problem. Yeah. Right.
So of course it does poorly. It's supposed to do poorly in this scenario.
Yes.
What's the problem? Why is that a problem?
Yeah.
They'd say, well, it's dragging my performance down.
But that just gets back to, is your money here to serve your life or the other way around? You know, is your
right.
prime focus always and everywhere, always making a certain return? Or is it does the return include the living equity piece?
Well, but there's something about this environment, I call it the trance,
mm-hmm.
where people forget.
They forget yes.
why I, you know, why did I take this position? And that's why... I keep coming back to, you have to know what you own and why you own it. And one of the reasons I do, you know, I didn't used to believe in writing a financial plan,
mm-hmm.
but now I do because you got to write it down and say, okay, I'm doing this because of this and this because of this and this, you know, and you go.
It's a reference point you can go back to kind of
right.
ground yourself. Yeah.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. I learned things I didn't know when I was an investment advisor for 10 years.
And I always learn things when talking to you, so I appreciate it.
So, well, you learn how hard it is to read a mortgage portfolio.
Yes. Yes.
And I, you know, I think they did that because they were doing fraud.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it doesn't surprise me. I've never seen an instance of fraud that was simply explained because it's
right.
part of clouding the issue so that the fraud can go on.
So I before we close, I do want to focus on the fact that finding the right help and building relationships takes a lot of time. And you've got to invest the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so if you're listening to this, take a deep breath and just say, I'm going to build this into my time budget. Cut out half your TV watching.
Yeah.
Take the time and go find some serious help if that's what you need. And just understand that there's nothing in this world that you can't understand and make intelligent decisions about if you're willing to invest the time and just keep learning.
Absolutely. And the only thing I would add to that is when you say you have to invest the time in everything, just get started.
Right.
Small steps.
Right.
Just take one little step and get started.
Right. Turtle.
Yes.
Turtle.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Tim, thank you very much. I can't say how much I appreciate being in cahoots with you. And I look forward to doing something for the second quarter equity overview.
Likewise. Thank you for having me. I always enjoy it. And I look forward to the next one.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Solera Report. You have a great day.